In the Know is powered by the Minnesota Daily. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we are. Another week, another podcast.
Who's starting it? Are you or am I?
I can start it.
Okay.
Welcome back to In the Know, breaking down the used news. We're your hosts.
I'm Mariah King.
And I'm Luke Diamond. And we're exhausted because it's been way too long since we've had a holiday and we're not due for one for another week. I really shouldn't complain. A week's not that long, but it feels like a month.
I mean, a week is long when it's stacked on top of like 15 other ceaseless weeks.
True. And it's long when you have approximately 8 million assignments between now and the next holiday.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty accurate assessment.
Yeah, man, rough times around campus, rough times. That's okay. We can sympathize. All right, what do we got for news this week?
As you all know, last week were the midterm elections, and campus actually saw a surge in voter turnout for students.
Oh, okay, how big of a surge?
Well, the Superblock precinct increased from 32% in the 2014 election to 56% in the 2018 midterm election.
That's like an increase by half.
How many times have you tried to do math on this show?
I know, and I always fail. Although that time it was correct, and it was about a really positive, heartening piece of news. So that's good.
Yay, democracy!
I told you that would be funny.
Yeah, that was silly.
Luke, what else do we have on the docket?
Okay, ready? This is actually wonderful breaking news from The Daily that I really enjoy. Generation Z, according to the American Psychological Association, which they define as those aged 15 to 21 years old, is the most stressed generation. That sounds right. Like, that sounds right to me.
I'm just sitting here silently while 23-year-old Luke, not a Gen Zer, chuckles profusely to himself.
Yeah, I got my feet kicked up over here with a pina colada and Mariah's freaking out, according to the study, freaking out about what? Gun violence, immigration reform, and basically all the things that polarize our country.
Yeah, I'd say that's an accurate assessment.
And not to pile bad news on bad news, but if any of those Generation Zers were planning on relieving their stress by going to the CBD coffee dispensary that was supposed to open in Dinkytown, they're hitting some pretty serious troubles with the FDA. Tell us about that.
It is with a heavy heart that I relay the information that CBD oil, cannabis oil, for those of you who don't remember,
which is not the same thing as cannabis, but does, according to its definition, have mild psychoactive effects. Please continue.
CBD oil has yet to be approved by the FDA, which none of us are shocked by.
Yeah, no.
But Cosmic Bean Dispensary has reached a happy middle ground. Rather than infusing their food and drinks with cannabis oil, they're going to sell it right next to their food and drinks.
Oh, okay. So instead of going in the products, it's just going to be next to the products, and so people buy them separately.
Adjacent, essentially.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess that would kind of make sense. If you don't put cannabis oil in the food, then really, does the Food and Drug Administration have any authority over that?
I bet we'll find out pretty soon.
I bet we will. Okie doke, we have got a two-hitter for you this week. Let's jump into story number one. We're here with a new guest to In the Know, which I always love. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Madeline Denninger, and I am the city editor here at The Daily.
So the story that we're doing this week is, we're coming around to the tail end of it, because it's been unfolding for what, like 2 years now?
Yeah, the whole kind of story really broke 2 years ago, and we're still dealing with the aftermath of that in this lawsuit. Well, the story starts in September 2016, following an alleged sexual assault, allegedly involving Gopher football players. The report was in the media that this was essentially a sexual assault that involved multiple people, including some watching while it happened and then others partaking. On the night of September 2nd, 2016, the Office of Equal Opportunity and Affirmative Action investigated this, and that resulted in the suspension of 10 Gopher football players. That led to the team boycotting.
The Minnesota football team is boycotting their bowl game and all squad
Minnesota
activities.
Minnesota suspended 10 football players indefinitely from all team activities Tuesday after an alleged sexual assault. and the rest of the team is boycotting in protest.
We, the United Gopher football team, issue this statement to take back the reputation and integrity of our program and our brothers that have faced unjust Title IX investigation without due process.
So they did not practice. They said, we are not going to play in this bowl game. And basically, they did not act as athletes. They didn't go to practice. They didn't go to trainings. They said, we are not going to do anything until these suspensions are lifted. Now, these players then went to a university subcommittee on sexual assault to hear their cases, and they did that for 2 days. And following that, 4 of those 10 players were expelled, and 2 more were given suspensions of 1 year. And then following that, they were allowed to appeal to the provost, and one of the players with the suspension got theirs lifted. So in total, 5 players actually faced disciplinary action. So now, fast forward to June of 2018, 9 of these players, they're both current and former. So they're suing the university. They filed this in June because they feel as if they were not given due process and they were discriminated against in this investigation that the U did.
And what does that mean? Like, what is their discrimination claim?
Sure. So they are claiming that because it should be noted that all of these players are Black men, all of them. And they're claiming that the university had unfair biases or made assumptions about this case because they were Black men. Mm-hmm. But the university really released their official response, you could say, to this lawsuit on Friday. That would be the 9th. And so it's a pretty lengthy document. It's about 45 pages. But basically, it's the university's they're seeking to dismiss the case, which isn't surprising. And they lay out why the university's investigation was fair, it was legal, it gave these men due process. They note that they had the chance to appeal, one to the subcommittee, then to the provost, and they could have appealed it to a court as well. The men chose not to. They're saying that they did not, there wasn't any defamation ground that they could stand on. They claim that the president didn't take a side. They're saying that reasonably these men can't argue from like a legal definition that they actually experienced emotional distress. They point to the 5 individuals and they say, we did not discriminate on the basis of race or gender. We discriminate based on what our investigations found and men who we feel like were involved.
What happens next?
Right. So the university in their memo said, we think the judge should dismiss this case because we don't think that this lawsuit has legal grounds to stand on. As of today, November 13th, the judge has not dismissed the case. The court date is set for December 21st. It could be dismissed, and now it is in the hands of the court.
Today we are sitting down with Michelle Griffith, and what do you cover?
Student government.
Exciting.
So exciting.
This week you covered student housing, correct?
Yeah. So I covered this new campaign that the Student Legal Services is doing, and they are just informing students of their rights as tenants and basically what like a landlord should do as a good landlord, maybe what they can and cannot do. They're just kind of like reaching out to students and being like, hey, this is your rights, like, This is how things are done.
So can you explain to me the inner workings of the campaign?
Yeah. So what they did is that they decided to break this up with like within 3 weeks. So the first week, what they did is they went out to freshman dorms and just held these little workshops and just said, hey, freshmen, like this is what a lease is, basically. They held these group lease sessions. So they took leases from popular apartments around here, like the Knoll, Bridges, Hub, like all these common leases that students will probably end up signing from, you know, a company or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they went over like, okay, this is like, they basically went over what was in that lease and helped students do that.
That is so helpful.
You know, those Nature Valley crumble bar, like, you know, like
do I ever?
Yes. So they were handing those out and their motto was like, don't let your, I don't know, don't quote me, but their motto was like, don't let your house crumble or something.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
Yeah.
Those crumbs get everywhere.
Oh yeah, it's insane.
Student legal services coming in with that pun.
Yeah.
Wow. When did this program start?
This is a brand new thing this year. They do a campaign every year, but this year they decided to do student housing and off-campus housing because they found that they are getting a lot of complaints from students about how their property is managed and their deposits, just like anything you could think of as far as off-campus housing goes, they are getting these complaints.
What were your big takeaways from, like, who you talked to at Student Legal Services, attending this event, like any sage wisdom that you can pass on?
My big takeaway is that a lot of students don't know their rights. And so a lot of students just don't know, like, you know, they think they're students and like, oh, you know, I'm just like an 18-year-old. I don't know what I'm doing, that kind of thing. And that they shouldn't have those sort of rights.
Yeah.
But they definitely do. And landlords do not have the right to take advantage of students.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening.